Welcome to another episode of the Gay Bar Archive Show, where we explore gay history one bar at a time. I'm your host, Art Smith, and today we're talking with Matt Scalarud, the founder of Pink Media, who's going to tell us about his history with gay bars in New York City, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. So when I first started this project about a year and a half ago, Matt was one of the first people who actually interviewed me about my Gay Bar Archives project, researching the gay bars that we loved and lost from all over the country and a few from around the world. And today I'm going to flip the tables and I'm going to put Matt in the spotlight. And Matt, tell us a little bit about your bar history. And what you remember about the bars that you used to love going to.
Yeah. Well, when you and I were chatting earlier, I just, New York was always fun to chat about. A lot of it was just because I'm from LA originally, and I moved to New York in 2013. But by that time, I wasn't quite as exciting and fun as I was a decade before that. So I wasn't going out to the bars like I was before. But before, when I would come in, I would travel into New York. My first trip was actually 1997. I was here for Gay Financial Network and their big debut and launch. So I come out in New York and fell in love with the place and fell in love with the energy and the people and, of course, some of the nightlife. And that was when Hell's Kitchen was up and coming and taking more and more notoriety and business from the Chelsea area, I think. And so I ended up over time on some of my trips, absolutely falling in love with one of the bars there. Was called Velada. And it was just this amazing space that was always busy and very narrow. From what I remember, it was kind of up around 50th, 51st Street, somewhere up in there around 8th and 9th Avenue. And it was just this amazing place to where, especially when you make your way upstairs, it just had such an energy and such a great vibe. And it really became one of my favorite places in New York.
Very cool. And, you know, there's some rumors that in that general area, right on the edge of Times Square and Hell's Kitchen, there is a promoter in New York City who claims he's going to be opening a multi-level mega club in Manhattan again. So that area might be coming back to life with a new gay club.
And it's interesting to see that actually everything's been opening up over the last few weeks. And so you're finding, Rise, Atlas Social Club, all those kind of that have been there in Hell's Kitchen for a while are really coming back alive. And it's refreshing to see. And even when we were talking about Vlada and all the excitement there, there was one that was like one of the only after hours called Posh. And so it was always kind of the duality. You'd always be at Vlada till they closed, and then you'd work your way over to Posh. And I think Posh is definitely still there and reopening. And it just became one of those places that the crowd and the energy would follow from one place to the other, and everybody'd be still dancing and drinking it up. So it was just it was quite a phenomenon.
Now, you had mentioned Vlada, which was on West 51st. And they closed shortly after you moved there. They closed in like 2014 or 15.
Yeah.
I've heard it described as the only ice bar in Manhattan.
No. Oh.
Do you remember that aspect of it or?
Yeah. No, but what you do easily remember when you'd walk in is that they always had these vodkas. It was kind of in the days when flavored vodka was just sort of starting out, and they would have these bottles, these almost, they're not mason jars, but like these very large generic looking bottles. And each one of them had vodka with its own infusion in it that made it seem like they were making it in house. And so I remember that's what kind of got me started and interested in going above and beyond a regular vodka soda into all the flavors that Stoli and Absolut ended up coming up with, grapefruit and mango and all those things. But they seemed to be there first.
Yeah, I remember reading about that when I was doing my research. And one of the articles I had read said that they were known for their homemade exotic flavored infused vodkas, which suggests that you might be right. They may have been making it there with, some other vodka and then putting papaya or mango or whatever they felt like in it. and making it at home. And obviously, vodka was a big part of their image. Not only does the name Vlada kind of have that Russian vodka ring to it, but one patron in one of their Yelp reviews described it as a, quote, gay-infused vodka bar.
That would be it, especially New York, where everything is mixed. So it was you would have all sorts of people there. But of course, gay infused is a very good way of describing it.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me to hear about these different places that I never had the chance to go to, or in some cases that existed before I did.
Yeah,
and kind of get a little bit of personal perspective on it. So you mentioned you're originally from Los Angeles, from that area. What were your favorite bars in LA? Where did you like to hang out? And
Because you know, there's always, I remember my first gay bar was Rage, and for a lot of folks, Rage was the place, and then Mickey's opened after and so forth. So the center of West Hollywood was always alive and fun. But from that, I ended up having two favorites, and they were outside that area. And one of them I didn't mention to you before, is called Foo Bar. And Foo Bar, it's kind of it's sort of halfway in between West Hollywood and Silver Lake. And so I liked Foo Bar because of the same reason that I liked some of the bars in Silver Lake, because you'd end up with like a different mix of people. And in some ways they were easier to chat with, and I could almost want to say more down to earth, but maybe that's a little too judgy, but no, just easy to chat with folks there. And then the ultimate bar that had that vibe and really became my favorite was MJ's, which was in Silver Lake. And so both Foo Bar and MJ's both had this vibe, but MJ's was even better. And they would just, you would get guys there from all over the Valley, Orange County, and so forth. And it was always funny because their hottest night was Tuesday night. And, you know, I always thought to myself, don't those people have to work in the morning? Don't I have to work in the morning? But, you know, we'd be there till 1-2 in the morning because it was just such a great, great energy that they had at that bar on Tuesday nights. And that lasted for years.
Yeah. Actually, according to my research on MJ's, they had closed the same year as Vlada. So you must have had an impact that in 2014, your favorite bars just had to kind of vanish.
It was also around the time when I stopped going out as much. Maybe there's a correlation.
Maybe there is. now on MJ's, one customer had posted on one of their reviews online that they said the bar had two bathrooms, one for men and one for women.
Yeah.
But why do both bathrooms have urinals? So I guess that was the beginning of the transgender bathrooms, where anybody could go, they could identify as a woman or a man, but they were still going to have a urinal option. So
yeah, that's one way of looking at it. The other side way is that there were very few women that ever went to that club. It was almost all guys, and so they probably threw the urinals in there just to offload some of the line.
Now, the interior of that bar, at least from one description I read, was kind of industrial. Do you remember it being that way? Was it?
Yeah, the industrial. They and they would always have go-go boys in in all corners and all around the dance floor and so forth. They had a dance floor, they had a DJ. And it had that vibe, but it also had a whole outdoor area in the back, which was great, because in that way you can kind of get away from the heat and everything going on inside. You go outside for a little bit, drink, meet another group of people, go back in. They even had pool table and stuff inside as well. So it was always just, it was a really great mix.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that place. And you also mentioned Rage in West Hollywood, very recently closed.
Yeah.
I think it was at the end of 2020 or the beginning of this year.
Yeah, it was probably 2020, but it was unfortunate because that one's like quite an anchor. It's been there forever. It's like I said, first one I went to, and that was in the 80s.
However, the good news is that is the location that Lance Bass is planning to open his new addition to the gay nightlife scene, which he has apparently suggested through his newspaper and TV interviews, that it's going to basically blow away all the bars in the country. It's going to be the most phenomenal gay bar ever.
Well, I'm excited, and I, you know, and that kind of goes towards a broader discussion that here it's been COVID and shutdowns and everything, and there's been a lot of reinvention in the works and in going on. There's been some that's already happened as people have adjusted into that pandemic lifestyle. But now that things are opening back up again, I think we're going to see novelty and new ideas and new concepts. And this may be one of them. Maybe it's given them time to be able to kind of see what works and what doesn't in this new environment and try to create something out of that.
Yeah. And some of the people that I've interviewed already who have talked about, you know, the new Lance Bass project have said, if anybody can do it, it would be him. Because he's young enough, he's famous enough, he's gay enough that he could really make it happen. So
celebrities have a good draw, have a strong power when it comes to clubs and restaurants and all those things, right? Especially West Hollywood, you know, that corner where Pump Restaurant is at with Miss Vanderpump. It changed hands so many times, and it just was really hard for anybody to really kind of make a go of it until she came in and turned it around and created this restaurant with a bar, and it became such a hot spot. And I know a big part of that is just her celebrity status. So celebrity status really works in that part of the country. And so, you know, that's probably a good omen that it might work for him as well.
Well, let's hope so. Wish him the best of luck.
Yeah.
You're going to have to send me a photograph of that shirt so we can show him what a celestial cocktail shirt looks like. Cause that, you know, it's not, people can't get the full scope of it, but I can put it up as a photograph, and people really see the giant martini glasses and the cherries in space.
Yeah, cool. It's my crazy looking bar shirt. I bought for our own show, I Love Gay Today. I've been developing a wardrobe to try to match some of the folks I'm interviewing, and so this was my fun, bar-y, entertainment oriented shirt.
Very cool. So while you were in LA. Apparently you also occasionally made some ventures down to the capital of gay culture.
Oh yeah.
San Francisco. What do you remember about the clubs there? What were your favorite clubs in San Francisco?
Yeah. Well, San Francisco is always fun. Cause I'd get up there a lot, work, pleasure. And of course everything was all focused on 18th and Castro Street. So you kind of like, you have these crossroads and all the little bars that work their way out from there. They were just so close. You could walk or stumble from one to the other. But I think it's because I'm from LA, and this is some people may think that's a good or bad thing, but I fell in love with Badlands because Badlands was like one of the few bar clubs there that it actually had kind of a bit of an LA feel when you're there. And so they had dancing and great places to hang out and chat. And they always had really fun people. For me, that's always one of the top things I always look for is the people that these bars will attract. And so Badlands always just had a group of really fun people that I used to love to go to whenever I was in town, hang out, chat. And it became really good. And I think it's still there as well.
I don't think so. If I'm not mistaken, Badlands closed last year.
Oh, okay. I can't keep up with all these things.
That was on 18th Street, right?
Yeah. It was right up the hill.
Yeah, they were open from 1975 to 2020, 4.5 decades. And according to their announcement, it said, quote, after 45 years, Castro Video Bar Badlands has announced its permanent closure.
Wow.
Quote, later this fall, a new bar under new ownership will open in the Badlands location, owner Les Natale wrote on Facebook. The name of the new bar and other details will be announced later, closer to the opening date.
Yeah. See, that's what makes what you're doing even so much more important than you probably thought it was going to be when you first started, which is just that, you know, with the pandemic and the way it's hit bars and restaurants and so forth, much harder than so many other industries. That's opened up a whole series of articles and conversations about what is the future of, you know, where's all this going with so many bars shutting down over the last 12 months.
Well, and there's a lot of things that, as you know, having your finger on social media and the internet and the gay travel industry, you know, all those hats that you wear, you know how much things have changed in the last two decades. When 20 or 30 years ago, the gay bar scene was the center of our community. That was where all the connections were made. That's where you made your friends. You possibly met a business partner. You got support for whatever social cause you were working on. You organized political rallies. Everything was done under the umbrella of the nightlife scene. That was that was everything to the gay community. And as time has evolved, and as you have well seen, the social media has taken a big chunk of that, both on, you know, personal level and on a professional level. There's so many more outlets for integration where you can connect with people that, I mean, you and I, for example, have spoken for years online and feel like, you know, we've known each other and yet we've never met in person. 20 years ago, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. No, but a big, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, yes, not just social media, but Grindr and a lot of the apps have kind of changed how people meet and hook up and all points in between. But I think a bigger thing, because, you know, I've had these discussions before Grindr was really getting that, you know, as large as it is now, is that places like Toronto and even Miami, you know, they all had their own version of kind of a gay village. So did other places all around the country. Uh-huh. And a lot of that had started to fade out way before then. Folks were just blaming the internet in general, but really a lot of it seemed to boil down to the fact that things have been changing within the generations in terms of younger people just started to feel more accepted and would be able to, instead of running off and going to a separate bar from where all the friends were going, they would just kind of end up going to some of the big clubs and so forth, especially Toronto. They would just go to the same clubs that their friends were going to, which were these big warehouse clubs in a whole different part of town. And they were much more accepted there than maybe their previous generations were. So those changes, along with technology, I think is really been a slow progressive force in making changes in it, and the reason a lot of these bars have closed over those last two decades.
Yeah, I was just having this conversation a little bit earlier with Helen Buford, the owner of Julius in New York, and she was asking about you know, how it is that so many of the bars have been integrated over the years and or not integrated. And you had bars that were almost exclusively men and went, you know, exclusively women. And I'm not sure if this has been your experience, but when I first came out, which was the late 70s, when I first came out, my circle of friends was 99.9% white gay males. I mean, it wasn't planned. Yeah. But it just happened that way, that if you lived in a certain area and went to a certain bar, you met white gay males.
Yeah.
You didn't meet lesbians. You didn't meet people of color. You didn't meet straight people. And so back in those days when we were still struggling even more for our right to exist, we kind of bonded in those kind of groups.
Yeah.
And a lot of the bars you would walk into would have been all white male or, you know, all black male or all lesbian, but there wasn't a lot of integration like there is now. And I think that was a factor that kind of propelled the popularity of gay bars back then, is because you went there to see your own kind. Whereas now, like you said, you know, everybody has a straight friend, a gay friend, a lesbian friend, a pan friend, a trans friend, and they go out as a group to, who knows where? It could be Applebee's. They don't care, you know, or it could be some trendy little bohemian bar somewhere or a coffee shop.
But sometimes it's the opposite, which is also kind of controversial in our community, which is sometimes they all descend upon the gay bar. So especially in LA, the Abbey, you know, has always been
kind of a
cornerstone, and it's, you know, it creates controversy because more and more straight people, including women that are celebrating their bachelorette parties, would show up there and have a, you know, want to celebrate. And a lot of gay men felt strongly about that. A lot of them felt that that was not okay, and that they wanted it to be all gay. So, you know, not to debate that issue, but when you see the way the demographics are going, you see the way young people are, and especially now we have Gen Z starting to go out and so forth. You can't fight that trend. That trend, as far as mixing, really goes both ways, and you just have to accept that. And that's, you know, there's a lot of positivity in all that. And there's always going to be places that guys can go to, and especially West Hollywood, you know, they would end up just kind of strolling out of Abbey and go to Motherlode, which was much more all gay, and they would get what they're looking for. But, you know, it's just something that is happening. It's worldwide, really. And we just have to kind of go along with that ride.
Yeah, it's definitely a changing world. And of course, you know, there's also a situation now where there's far more people in the younger crowd. I mean, when I was 20 years old, I don't think I knew anybody who was admittedly a recovering alcoholic at 20 years old.
Yeah.
It just didn't. I'm sure there were people that should have been, but it was just part of the lifestyle. Now people are much more aware, you know, with DUI laws and recovery programs and everything else. You see a lot more people that don't even go to bars because of the, you know, the alcohol. They'd rather go to a coffee shop or, you know, a small little restaurant or, you know, wherever, and interact there. So it's definitely a changing scene, but I'm kind of hoping that we can at least look forward to a few new places on the horizon, including Lance's place in LA. I'd love to see what happens with that. I'm eager to see if he's going to try and, you know, stalk you and steal that shirt from you.
I'm making plans to go back to LA. So if it's open by the time I get out there, I'll have to wear this and see what happens.
Yeah, it's a very, very cool place. But I'm glad we could get, you know, some of your memories recorded and be able to kind of pick your brain a little bit about your history with the gay bars. And as you know, you did a segment on Julius a little while back. Yeah. And I'm going to be delving deeper into that in the near future with Helen. She is an awesome woman. And looking forward to seeing them around for another, I don't know, 40, 50 years. We'll see. I think she'll retire before then, though.
Maybe pass the baton and the torch off to someone.
So for those who don't know, Matt is also the creator of the hashtag I Love Gay series that is all over Twitter, Facebook, social media in general. And my favorite hashtag that I have been abusing the hell out of for the last 6 months is hashtag I Love Gay Bars. But we're going to list some of those and your websites and social media links at the end here, so everybody can kind of connect with you and stalk you or whatever they want to do and watch your videos, learn about gay people from all over the world. I know you do your interviews from the comfort of your own home or office, but you do them with people in Europe. I don't know what other continents you've done.
And that's a whole other conversation, but the whole way that we communicate and collaborate and engage with each other has really changed drastically over the last few years. And it's, you know, we've always wanted to be global, and in many ways we were with the internet and connecting us globally, but these tools with Twitter, and especially Twitter, connects us globally in a way that we never were before. And so now I end up feeling very connected with folks all over Europe and Australia and in India. So yesterday we interviewed these two guys that have a great podcast out of the UK. And it's just always a matter of just trying to get a time zone that works best for both of us for that. And then tonight at 6 p.m., I'm going to be doing one with us in Australia. And I just had a request come through with a really good candidate, and he's from India. So yeah, that's the world we live in today.
Yeah. And you know, by and large, you might almost look at this as one of the silver linings of COVID, because before COVID, you know, the idea of teleconferencing was out there.
Yeah.
But with COVID, Zoom particularly came right to the forefront. And now everybody in their brother's canary has a Zoom account and can sit there and do video chat with anybody in the world, which is really going to really impact the long term of communication. You know, it's something we didn't do even 5 years ago.
No, I think it's part of a huge phenomenon of a lot of little things that came about, whether it was remote work and Zoom and so many different things that I believe from where I'm sitting, I would say that the trend was already going there, but people changed slowly. So it just was kind of plodding along one step at a time, but COVID expedited these video chats and not only expedited it, but also forced them and others to really kind of grow up when it comes to their own technology and to kind of adapt and be ready for where things are as things continue to open up this year and into next year. I think all this technology is going to still be a part of Pride festivals that, you know, went virtual, film festivals, all the LGBT film festivals. They're not going to go to the pure old model that they were in. They've discovered that they have an audience on streaming. So all of that is going to be incorporated into the future of film festivals. And I think the list goes on.
It does. Yeah. And we're fortunate to be a part of that.
I'm excited. You're, like you said, the silver lining. So I'm looking forward to where all this goes.
Well, we wish you all the best with your endeavors and
Thank you. All
the hats that you have to wear in the media world, the travel world, and the business world in general. And we hope you have a fabulous weekend.
You too. Take care now.
Thanks, Matt.